Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey everyone, this is Kaveh, the host of the show you're about to listen to. Just wanted to put a little warning out there before we get started, because we're going to talk about some stuff in this episode that's pretty heavy. We're going to talk about sexual assault and rape. We're going to talk about torture. It's pretty rough at times, and it gets a little worse as we go along in the conversation. So, you know, I'll understand if you tap out at some point. But I do think this is important stuff to cover, and I really do want people to know what's going on over there. So thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the show. If you haven't already, share with your friends, tell people, like, subscribe on iTunes, all that stuff, or whatever, just listen. Anyways, here you go. Here's an episode with me and Dr. Arga Vonsalas and Dr. Montre Tavakoli talking about the protests in Iran.
Shalom, befarmin, to the Hune of Pod.
My name is Kaveh. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. I am the host of this little medical podcast. Today, you heard me speaking. Well, you probably didn't understand it, and that's okay if you didn't. It was Farsi, because even Farsi speakers probably didn't understand it, because my Farsi is so bad. Argavan is laughing at me with like the amusement of like someone seeing like a dog wearing a sweater, like like how adorable. My Farsi is not good. I'm sorry, but I was saying, welcome to the House of Pod. I have some special guests. A very, very Iranian themed show today. The first show where all the guests are Persian. It's very exciting for me. And no one more important than Dr. Arga Vonsalas, MD, PhD, PIMP, Associate Professor in the Department of Medicine at Stanford, an activist, a speaker, been on the show a couple of times already. I'm so happy you're back to help me figure out all the stuff we're going to talk about today. Arga Von, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm so excited to talk about this with your audience.
We are going to be talking, yes, with four, two, on, about. We're going to be joined in a little bit by Dr. Montre Tavakoli. And she's going to talk to us a little bit about her article that she just wrote, a blog piece for Kevin MD, about the Iranian protest and what's happening to the protesters. We're going to talk about that. But let's actually, before we get to that, I think, you know, it's interesting because I know you through the internet. Like, you know, you're a public figure on the internet. you're on the Twitter. You do a lot of public speaking. You speak at a lot of medical institutions, and you do really great talks about inclusion and diversity and the importance of those things. And you're a really important person to follow on Twitter. And we'll get to that at the end of the show. But there's something kind of funny that you and I discovered recently that I had no idea. We're from the same hometown.
That's right. Went to the same high school.
The same high school. It's a very non-Persian high school in Northern California.
Oh, no. In fact, I don't think I knew anybody else.
I knew one other Persian family. I'm like one in the whole town of Morgan Hill. I'm sure there was more. I only knew one. I would have loved to have known one other person like yourself. Did you have any other Persian friends growing up in our hometown?
No, I mean, listen, I don't know how it was for you, but I didn't feel very connected to that part of like my family or like that heritage. You know, we left Iran when I was five, and I didn't go back until after high school. So Iran was like pretty removed from me. Obviously my mom is like, you know, born and raised there, and I ate Persian food all the time. I love Persian food. So the food part I had down, but I didn't feel very connected to the culture. And Farsi for me, you know, I obviously was my first language, but when we moved to the US, my mom was very keen on me getting to know how to speak in English and write in English and doing well in school. And so we didn't speak Farsi at home. So it didn't take long for my English to become much better than my Farsi. And then I just was like embarrassed to speak Farsi.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was a long-winded way of saying that I didn't feel very close to Persian culture, and I wasn't really seeking it. So I wasn't looking for friends from Iran, or, you know, even when I went to college, like I didn't join the Persian Student Association or anything like that. It didn't feel like it was part of me. Plus, as you know, because we grew up roughly around the same time, there was so much stigma about being from Iran.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't, I guess, loudly and boldly proclaim it.
No.
At that point in my life.
People, this is funny. Some people know this who listen to the show, but I actually, I don't know how it started. I was very young when it started. So I don't remember the details of it. I think I was like, and I got into a fight at one point very early in like elementary school or some point. And my dad was like, you are going to go by Kevin. And so I went by Kevin until the end of high school, at which point I was like, you know, I kind of want you guys to call me Kaveh, call me by my name. You know, my friends were like, no, fuck you, man. We've known you as Kevin forever. We're gonna call you Kevin. But then
sensitive.
Oh, growing up in Morgan Hill, I mean, there are good folks there, but it was like, I remember we were at the coffee roasting club. We'd hang out, this little coffee club downtown. I'll hang out outside. And I was there with a big group of people. And there was this, someone got off the phone, because this is back in the days when you had like to get off the payphone to talk to your family. And they looked like shell-shocked, and everyone's like, what's wrong? They're like, some bomb went off somewhere. And I think it was like the Olympic Village. I think it was like, I forget who it was. It was probably like some sort of white dude blowing up like a federal building for some militia reason or whatever. But I remember just everyone stopping and looking at me, and I'm like, what?
Yeah, like you did it.
it was a weird sort of vibe.
Had both been in school. You would have been maybe in middle school when the first Gulf War happened.
Yeah.
I think I was in fourth grade. And that was the first time somebody asked me if I was a terrorist.
Yeah. What'd you say? Yeah, motherfucker.
You know what's interesting is the person who said that to me was a kid from Lebanon.
Well, that's a real bummer. Mm-hmm. Internalized racism.
Yeah.
What do you call it? It was funny. You didn't have this experience. When I went to college, it was different. I was like, oh wow, there's Persian people here, and even more for me. I don't know if this is for you, but I'm like, girls were like interested in me because like my name. They'd be like, oh my god, Kaveh, what kind of name is that? It's so exotic. What is it? Make me one of your princesses or whatever. And it was great. And I don't know anything about being Persian, because I'm like the ultimate, like, you know, whitewashed, you know, I pass very well. And like, I'm deep undercover. And like, so I don't know much about it, but I knew just enough to like be kind of exotic to like, you know, yeah. White women who like were interested in maybe trying dipping their toes into some new waters. I was like a really good gateway ethnicity. You know what I mean?
That's
for
weird.
Girls. So anyways, okay. That's not what we're here to talk about. We could talk about that all day. And we probably will some other point at drinks at Zeitgeist, and we'll go over all those experiences. But we're going to talk about something so much worse, so much worse. And we're going to talk about what's happening in Iran, the protests, why. And really, if there's anything that we can do to help over there, we're going to discuss that as well. To join us, we have Dr. Tava Kohli. She's here. She's ready to go. Shall we invite her into this little chat?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. And we're back. Joining Argovan and myself to discuss what's happening in Iran and give us a little bit more understanding and a little bit more detail. We have Hemong fellow, Dr. Tava Kohli. I'm so embarrassed that as an Iranian guy, I fuck up Iranian names constantly. So I'm so sorry. Tell me how to pronounce your name correctly.
You know what? It's Montre Tava Kohli, but I have such an uncommon name. Everybody tends to butcher it. So you are definitely not the only one.
No, but I mean, I probably shouldn't. I probably shouldn't. Anyways, thank you so much for joining us. Part of the reason I brought you on was I read your blog post on Kevin MD, where you just was out, I think, just yesterday or today, right?
Yesterday, yeah.
Yeah. And you give a little bit more detail into what's actually happening in Iran right now. And, I follow along closer than the average American does because I'm interested in the topic, but still there's so much I don't know. And if there's so much that I don't know, I mean, it really goes to show how little we in the West are hearing about what's happening in Iran. So what I'd like to do, and maybe Argovan, maybe I'll start with you on this one. If we could just start at the beginning with people here. I mean, we don't have to go all the way back to the 1979 Iranian Revolution and the enforcement there of the hijab, but can we start where these most recent protests have been about, what they've been about?
Yeah, absolutely. But I will just say that I think we do have to mention the 1979 Revolution, because to understand where we are today, you have to know that it's been almost 44 years of oppression going on in Iran. And not to say that it was completely free of oppression prior to 1979. And, you know, that I think we definitely don't have to go that far back. But what's important to know is that there was a revolution in 1979 that essentially was backed by the US and the CIA that led to Ayatollah Khomeini being in charge. And that is what started really the descent of the country that's gone on over the last several decades, which has ruined the economy of the country, which has created a completely misogynistic, gender separate country in which women and men cannot study side by side. They cannot be at the gym at the same time. Women are not allowed into sports stadiums, etc. All of that happened because of the revolution in 1979. So this current set of protests that started on September 16th of 2022 was just, in my mind, inevitable. It just happened that event is what set it off, but something was going to set it off. And in fact, there have been protests going on for a long, long time. Even in November of, I'm going to get this wrong, was it 2019, Montre?
It started in November of 2019, and it led up to around January, February of 2020. Yeah.
At that instance, which they call like Bloody November in English, thousands of people were murdered by the Islamic regime. In the 1980s, thousands of people were murdered by the Islamic regime. You know, so this has been repeated instances of protest because people want freedom. That's it. They just want to be able to live life like we do. And I know that there has been, I agree with you completely, very little press coverage, but the coverage that has been has really focused a lot on this hijab question, which you brought up as well. But the hijab is like just a symbol. It's a symbol of all that is wrong with the regime in Iran. It's a symbol of all the things I mentioned, the economic depression, the lack of opportunities, the gender separation, all the things that have to do with, you know, lowering the marrying age for women, which happened under this regime down to 9. It's now 13 for girls, but it's lower for girls than it is for boys. Women's value is literally by law half of the value of men. So like if I were going to be a witness in a court case, they would need 2 of me to counter 1 man's testimony. Anyway, so these are all of the things that people are protesting. And why it's happening in this instance is that a young woman, 22-year-old Kurdish woman who was in Tehran, was arrested by the morality police, is what they call them in the US. But basically they alleged that she wasn't wearing her hijab or head covering appropriately. Now, I've seen the photos. I think we've all seen the photos. Like, she was wearing her headscarf the same way that I wore it the last time I was in Iran, which was in 2017. And it was more, she had more of her head covered than a lot of girls do and women do in Iran. So it's not actually that she was doing something wrong or different from everyone else. But she was arrested and beaten, and she died as a result of the injuries that she sustained while being detained. And that was really the spark in the powder keg and brought people to the streets to say, we do not want this. We cannot tolerate this anymore. We already didn't want it. But like, now you're going to do this. You're going to murder someone over their headscarf. Like, that is, we draw the line. At least this is my take. And we have to all acknowledge that none of us is in Iran right now. And so this is our effort, is to try to amplify the messages from people in Iran. But those are the things that we're hearing, that they're fed up. And so that started, as I said, September 16th, the day that Mahsa Jina Amini died. And they promptly arrested the 2 main journalists who had been involved in making her story well known, which are Niloufar Hamedi and Elahi Mohammadi, who remain in prison today. And they started immediately doing what they do every time there are protests, which is to arrest everybody they can just for being on the street and for having a voice, and then killing people. I mean, this is what they do every time. And then, of course, turning off the internet. So restricting internet access so that the rest of the world can't really know what's happening. That's like their playbook every time. And it has worked in the past. You know, eventually people say, gosh, like, you're killing so many of us. This isn't going anywhere. We give up. Go ahead.
And it takes a little bit of interest from the West for short periods of time, and then it goes away. I think if the United States and people in the West in general had, I think they'd be blown away by the history of Iran. I'm not even talking about the ancient history. I'm just talking about the recent, if they knew about Project Ajax and they knew about what the American and Western involvement was in bringing about the rise of Khomeini, I think they would be pretty blown away by it. It's never been really covered. I mean, the closest was like maybe a one little line script in the beginning of Argo before he went on to do your typical Hollywood bullshit, right? So you don't get that very much. If it, one day it'd be interesting, but I do think, Mantra, tell me, I feel like historically these protests feel a lot different. There's been protests, as Argovan mentioned, for a while now. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about why these protests are different, how they're different than ones in the past.
Yeah, they're completely different because it's Generation Z that's pouring out onto the streets. In the past, there have been demonstrations and people have been, you know, poured onto the streets, and they've been upset about the situation. And previously it had been, for example, Bloody Aban, which was Bloody November, was related to an economic crisis, actually. That's why people started protesting and whatnot. What they were talking about—
It had to do with the price of oil, right? The one in—
It had to do with the price of oil, that's correct. And there was some talk about them wanting the Islamic regime to be replaced, but a lot of people were also talking about reform. That's not what we're seeing here. That's not what people are talking about. The young generation, they're seeing how the rest of the world is living through social media, right? They are bloggers. They're talking about their lives and they're seeing the lives of other people in the West, you know, all around the world. And in seeing all of that, they realize that this is not what they want for themselves. And so I think that's where things differ. And in addition to all of that, they've suffered so much as a result of being as oppressed as they have been, but I think also being exposed to what it means to live outside of Iran. that they have essentially become suicidal. They're willing to give up absolutely everything. They're willing to give up their lives in order to experience freedom in this country that they live in. So I think that's where the biggest difference lies.
It seems also the places we're seeing it are quite different. It's not just the cities anymore. In Iran, it's just like it is in the U.S. You go to the cities, it's the more educated, like, you know, university class people out there protesting. But it's not been like that. It's been in places like Mashhad and Qom. I don't know if I'm saying those places right, but I know they're more like, like holy cities. You know, yeah. I know that's both in like the urban middle classes and the rural working areas. It seems like the biggest challenge or the biggest like mass movement of Iranians since probably the revolution in 79. It feels like this is bigger, feels stronger. But you mentioned what's happening to the protesters. Could you speak on that a little bit? Can we talk about the casualties? Because I mean, we've seen numbers. It's hard to get good numbers. Obviously, they say the regime says ridiculous things like, oh, that one person who like had their head crushed in and their eyeball came out of its socket, that was they had a heart attack. You know, right. They'll say like absurd things. What kind of numbers are we seeing, and where are you able to get that kind of information? You do mention this a little bit.
Yeah, it's impossible to get an accurate number. I think that this number of 500 plus individuals having been killed and the 69 plus children who have been killed, this significantly underestimates the actual numbers. And the reason for that is A, because there are plenty of silent executions that are ongoing that we're not talking about. Nobody's talking about, you know, the information's not coming out, so we can't spread the word about it.
People are calling those extrajudicial executions. These are the ones that are just happening on the streets or in the prisons or whatever, but aren't being tracked by anyone.
Exactly. So, you know, everybody heard about the two executions of these 23-year-olds about 2 to 3 weeks ago at this point in time. But I had actually posted images of people being hung about a month and a half ago on my Instagram page, for example. So this has been going on and nobody's really talking about it. So that significantly leads to an underestimate of the numbers. In addition to that, a lot of the family members are afraid of speaking up about what's going on, because if they speak up and say, hey, listen, my child has been abducted or has been killed or whatever, then they're at risk of being taken in and abducted by the Islamic Republic. And that has happened. There was an image of a 14-year-old girl who had been, am I allowed to use the word rape on this? On this?
Yeah,
show?
You can use whatever word you like. I mean, I think, you know, I'll put a trigger warning at the top of this episode. I think it's probably going to be pretty important that people understand. We're going to talk about some very dark stuff that like even I can't find that much humor in, but we'll, you know, we're going to have to cover it, and we have to be open about it. People need to know.
Okay, great. So there was an image of a 14-year-old girl who had been raped and had been killed. And the image of her is actually in rigor mortis. And it's a horrific image to see. And her mother spoke up about her death, and she's been abducted, and we don't know what's happened to her since. In all likelihood, she's probably dead. But does that death count towards that number? It's not. And a lot of this is going on.
Well, and I'll just add to that, like, especially earlier on, like in September, October, there were so many videos on social media of the various police forces in Iran on the streets with guns out, just shooting into crowds, and even including people whose death was captured because they were filming what was happening. And then you see that the film, you know, the camera drops suddenly, and then you find out that person has died. Like Ghazadeh Chelabi was one of those people. And so my point there is just that there are, as Montre was saying, the, you know, people who are up for execution, who have received death sentences for, you know, war against God. And we can talk about that if you want, what that means. But there's also just so many deaths that there's no way anybody can be keeping track of or verifying, also because the regime then steals the bodies. They don't leave the bodies there for the families to claim. They take the bodies. So it's really impossible to have good numbers. I will say, though, for people who want like some sense of the numbers that Montre was mentioning, HRANA is an organization that's been posting numbers daily. And so they include only verified information, which is why the numbers are, I agree with Montre, lower than what reality probably is, but they're the verifiable numbers.
significantly lower, right? Because, I mean, in the areas where the ethnic minorities reside, they're under militaristic attack. There are tanks shooting at these people. And these, you know, these individuals who are dying are not being accounted for in these numbers that are being reported.
And that's another great point. Like, we had all these videos coming out from Mahabad and Javon Rood a while back. And then now again in Javon Rood, same thing, where you see literally tanks in the streets and military force against a people who largely have no weapons. That's just murder. And because we're mostly seeing that in areas where there are ethnic minorities as the majority. So like in Sistan Baluchistan and in Kurdistan, that's genocide. I mean, I made a whole video about that, like whatever, a month and a half ago. Because that's what that is when you're targeting your killing on specific groups of people with the goal of extinction, which is, I think we would all agree that's what they're trying to do. That's genocide.
Right.
You know, you brought up that term that the regime is using in these trials. I forget the word in Farsi, but it means war against God, right? It's like the most absurd concept to me. It's like one of the guys is Tumaj, is this rapper who's like this Iranian rapper who is being who's on trial for war against God. And I'm just like, don't you guys understand, if you're suggesting that some Iranian rapper that no one outside of Iran had heard of before can actually wage a successful war against God, then God is amazingly weak. Like, what kind of God like does rap battles, like, and not even like with like big name rappers? Like, it's like the dumbest fucking shit. It makes me so mad. Like, here's the thing that it's hard to explain to Americans, and I think maybe we should try. There's these real paradoxes that are hard to describe. Like, for example, one, that Iranians could be capable of doing all this shit on both sides, this intense bravery. We're seeing these people literally willing to give up and giving up their lives, giving up their eyesight. They're being shot specifically in the eyes with rubber bullets. That's what they're aiming for, to blind them. Women are being shot in the genitals in the crowd to just humiliate them and to try to destroy their lives. There is rape in the prisons. There is, it's a part of the regime's oppressive tools. All these things can happen on one side, whereas people are fighting so hard on the other. People don't understand like how much we have a strong sense of injustice, Iranians, and it drives me crazy. Like, it makes me so angry. I have a hard time controlling it. Honestly, I really have a hard time. It's like, when it comes to this, it makes me so mad. And there's other things I think would confuse people too, that maybe they're seeing from this for the first time. That one, you know, people in the West have this impression that Middle Eastern women are like maybe demure or letting themselves be oppressed. But they don't, I mean, maybe they don't understand how famously strong-willed Iranian women are.
I've
been known for it. You know what I mean? It's hard to explain to people how this dichotomy exists, you know?
Well, I mean, I think that's true, but what we're seeing, so I've been putting videos on TikTok since the beginning about what's happening in Iran. And one of probably the most common comments I get is, oh my God, the bravery of Iranian women. And especially when, you know, the early videos of them burning their headscarves, or even this video that came out yesterday of this girl toward the soldiers without her hijab, and she's holding her hands up with peace signs in both hands, which I don't think that's wise, by the way. I saw that video and I was like, please seek shelter. But we see videos like that, and people comment all the time, oh, these women are so brave. And, you know, I made a video about this as well, that I've always known Iranian women are brave, because we all have stories like what I'm about to share, which is that my mom in 1980s Iran got a divorce from the man who she married, who was my father, who was not any of the things that she needed him to be, and was creating an unsafe space in our home. And she managed to legally get a divorce, which is nearly impossible to do in the current under the current regime. And then we left. So she took me, a five-year-old, by herself to the United States to get a PhD. So I have a PhD. Even when I was getting my PhD, I was like, I could not imagine doing this with a five-year-old, six-year-old, seven-year-old, whatever, who I had to deal with. Like, I had a hard enough time just dealing with the degree. And so I've always known that Persian women are fire. But it's great, actually. That's one of the good things that has come out of this revolution, is that the world is now seeing that as well.
Iranian women are very highly educated. And I think one thing that people don't tend to realize is that while Iran is an Islamic country, and there are plenty of Muslims in Iran, the people who live there are actually very westernized in their thinking, actually. You know, before the Islamic Revolution, women would go out to the beaches in their bikinis and whatnot. And in speaking to the youth, because I do talk to some of them, they're more open-minded than us out here, honestly. You know, a lot of our parents, they came from, they lived under the Shah, and so they thought a certain way. And you know, the youth nowadays, they've really evolved with the times, and they're just really open-minded. A lot of the youth are actually queer. There was a survey that came out in 2014, and this was a survey that was conducted by the Islamic Republic, and it showed that 17% of young adults and the youth, the adolescents, actually identified as being quote-unquote homosexual, so lesbian or gay. And that's a huge percent. So this is, I'm letting you know this, I'm giving you the statistics so you just start to understand the population of individuals that we're actually talking about here. I don't know, Arlan, if you have anything else to add to that.
No, well, the one thing I was gonna say is to build off something you mentioned earlier is one of the ways that this set of protests, or I think we're really calling it a revolution, is different from what's happened in the past, is that it's a united front. So you mentioned Gen Z, and absolutely, they've been a huge driving force and sustaining the majority of the injuries as well. But we have seen a lot of older people out in the streets and posting online. So we're going across ages. And it's also not, you mentioned cities and rural, and that is true. We've got both rural parts of the country and cities involved, but we've got all the different ethnic minorities as well. I mean, they're chanting things like, whether it's Sistan in Balochistan or whether we're Baloch or Kurd, we're for Iran, you know, these types of things that I think we haven't really seen in the previous rounds. So I think that's part of what makes it so powerful and why there has been this continuation over months. I think we're on, are we on week 16 now?
Don't make me do math. Yes, Persian women are very strong. It's very intimidating to be on a show with two Persian women.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
And we're all wearing black, by the way. Did you notice we're all wearing black? Yeah. And that wasn't even like very planned. Much. That's so Persian of us.
That's very Persian.
You know what, though? I think a lot of people are wearing black also because of the ongoing events. If you notice, I have a black ring on my finger and I haven't been taking it off. I've had it on my hand and I refuse to remove it until we win this revolution. And it represents the people who are being killed on a daily basis. It represents my support for them. So I think you're going to be very commonly seeing black around if you go around Persian folks nowadays. But is it okay if I add something else to what you had mentioned previously about the, you started kind of going back to, you know, the difference between the ongoing demonstrations and revolution really from those that had occurred in the past. And one of the really important statistics is, there was an audio leak from the Islamic Republic. This was around the time of the World Cup. And in that audio leak, they mentioned that during the nationwide strikes, on the first day of, I think it was the second nationwide strikes, 70 to 100% of the markets shut down completely in all the cities that were involved. I'm sure if we had the stats for the second and third days, we'd see that it actually went up to 100%. In Tehran, the capital, it was actually at 100%. So we're talking about something completely different here. Yeah. And it's really important, I think, because what people need to understand is a lot of people will say, well, you know, there are a lot of atrocities going on in throughout the world. And why should we care about Iran? And I think the difference here is that we have a prime opportunity to save 88 plus million individuals and all their future generations. This opportunity is not going to present itself in a year from now, in 2 years from now, 5 years from now. It's literally either now or never. And so I think it's really important for people to understand this and for them to realize that this is the reason why all eyes need to be on Iran right now. Because we can literally save these lives.
Can I just add something? I know you want to ask something, but to that exact point, Hannah Newman, who is, I think, an MP in Germany, she posted something today that we've been saying for a long time, which is if we want stability in the Middle East, if we want Iran to not have a nuclear weapon, then what we all want is freedom for Iran, because this current regime is doomed for everybody, truly, except for themselves. So if we want, for example, Ukraine, if we want to support Ukraine, well, Iran is selling drones and weapons to Russia. You want to help Ukraine? Help us get rid of this regime. If you want more stability in the region, if you want less terrorism in the region, we've got to get rid of this regime. If you want Iran not to have a nuclear weapon, we've got to get rid of this regime. So all the things that I think people in the West want will happen if we get rid of this regime.
If you care about tax dollars, care about what's going on in Iran. No, honestly.
Let me ask you guys this, though. Let me ask you, I mean, when people start talking about intervening and having the U.S. or Americans or the West in general do something, I think a lot of Americans still, and rightfully so, are concerned about getting involved in a war or a conflict. And I assume that none of us here want troops in Iran. None of us think that would be a good thing at all. We don't want that. So what do we want? What do you guys think should be done by us in the West?
I have a list of things that I can pour out for you right now.
Let's do it.
We need to halt all negotiations with the Islamic Republic, including JCPOA, the nuclear deal. I understand that people are like, well, we don't want this regime to have access to a nuclear weapon. We don't want them to have that either. This is a prime opportunity to completely get rid of the Islamic Republic and get rid of this regime. Let's get rid of them. Why negotiate with them? Number two, we need to urge countries to expel the regime diplomats. We need to get rid of them. Three, freeze the Islamic Republic's assets. That is huge. If we were able to do that, we would automatically win this overnight, really, honestly. Impose targeted sanctions against the Islamic Republic and their affiliates, not towards the people of Iran who've been suffering under the sanctions that have been placed over the past couple of decades, but targeted sanctions against the Islamic Republic and their affiliates. Stop supporting organizations such as NIAC. NIAC is an organization that is affiliated with the Islamic Republic, and it is pushing for reform. The Iranian people do not want reform. This regime needs to go. This regime is not reformable in any shape, way, or form, if you understand the brutality and the atrocities that are going on in the country. And then two really important things. All of these are important, but I think the most important things right now, at this very moment in time, we really need our politicians to start reaching out to tech companies to create loopholes to overcome the internet restrictions in Iran. And the reason this is so important is because initially, like, there have been internet restrictions throughout this revolution, but we were getting footage during the first couple of months. Over the past 3 to 4 weeks, I would say, the footage has been extremely limited, and it's hard for us to amplify the voices of the Iranian people when we don't see what is going on. I've tried to change my focus and tried to focus on translating the text messages that are coming out of Iran, but you don't have the same kind of impact. We need to see the footage. We need to see what's happening. A lot of what we're hearing about two particular regions in Iran currently that are under massive attack, we've been receiving information via text messages. I was fortunate or unfortunate, there was a clip that was shared last night, and I'm not sure why it was pulled. But in one of these two regions that I'm referring to, it was a clip of this girl screaming as she was being taken away in this car. And the text that came with it said that it was actually an entire family that was abducted and was being taken away in the middle of the night. And what it said was that at 3 a.m., there are 500 police forces in the region who are literally just knocking on doors and abducting these individuals. Imagine the kind of impact sharing this kind of footage would have on the world.
Yeah,
people need to see this, and we need to hear their stories. And I personally have been posting less and less recently because I don't have the same content I had access to a month ago or 2 months ago. So we really need that. And that's one of the most important things we need help with. I know that Elon Musk has been sending Starlink and whatnot, but that goes to the richest people in the country. And it's helped to a certain degree, but not in the way that we need or had hoped for. Last but not least, the Regime Act of 2022. So what we also want is for the Western countries to stop allowing members of the Islamic Republic and their affiliates to enter our countries, to enter the U.S., to enter Europe and whatnot. And on December 19th, U.S. lawmakers actually proposed legislation to ban affiliates of the Islamic Republic under what is called the Regime Act of 2022. And we need this bill to be passed. Now, there are some deficits in it because it's going to prevent the Islamic regime, their affiliates and their family members from getting new visas. And if they have visas, they're going to get revoked. But that's not going to prevent, or it's not going to affect those individuals who already have passports or who are citizens of these countries. Nevertheless, it's still very important to get that act passed because that's something that we've been working really hard towards.
So where should people go? Who should people be writing? Is there a place that gives them a template to write these things? Is there a source we can send them?
That's a great question. You know, honestly, I am actually over the past couple of days, because I've been doing a lot of my posting on my page on my own. I've had one translator who's been helping me a lot, but I've been doing a lot of it on my own. And over the past couple of days, I've been trying to get a team together to help me with this. And so some of the people on my team are currently working on putting together a mail-to link that is going to include a list of all the actions that we need to be taken by our politicians. And what I'm hoping to do with that mail-to link is it's going to be set up in a way where you click on the link, it has the email, it populates, but then you get to write, you know, what city and what state you're from, and then it's automatically going to populate the contact information of senators and House of Representatives and whatnot. So people's representatives based on where they're located and where they live. So that's something that I'm actively working on, and I'm going to be posting it to my page, and I'm hoping that that it'll eventually go viral. So that's in the works. I don't know if you
have Argovan, you have.
Well, I wanted to add that there are organizations that I'm sure you know, like Middle East Matters, that have already set up something like that. And I have a document as well. It's just a Google Doc, but the link is bit.ly/freeiran2022, all lowercase, that has a templated letter and a link to a place called democracy.io, which similarly, you just put in your location and it automatically will send whatever you copy paste to your representatives. But I wanted to just add two more things related to these actions that governments could take. I agree with everything that Montre said. But one other thing, I would take it one step further and say that we need to actually deport the family members of the regime, because they are here, they are in Canada, they are in Europe, and they are living a hijabless, mm-hmm. modesty-free lifestyle. And they're doing it off of the backs of the people of Iran, whose money is being stolen from them by the regime. So I actually do think, I know not everybody agrees with me on that, but I think that deporting those individuals would give us the biggest bang for our buck in terms of folding that regime. But the other thing, when we're talking about our members of Congress in this country or MPs in other countries, is, you know, I don't know exactly how effective this is, but we've been seeing a lot of other people, politicians sponsoring prisoners in Iran, and political prisoners specifically. So this started with some German MPs, but has really spread all over Europe. I have not seen this happening in the US. I've tagged, you know, my representatives and asked them to do it. But the idea is that someone, you know, let's just say AOC, for example, could say that she's going to become a political sponsor for someone who's in prison. Like we mentioned the journalist earlier, Niloufar Hamidi. She could say, I'm going to become the political sponsor for Niloufar Hamidi. we don't in the U.S. obviously have any trade with Iran. So it's not like there's some legitimate immediate consequence to that. But it is the idea that if harm comes to Niloufar, then AOC in this example would be trying to get some accountability from the regime. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, it gets these people's names out and known. Like, we Iranians have been screaming people's names and hashtagging them like crazy for months now. But when someone like an AOC does that for somebody, like, obviously that's a different scale. And we do think that, you know, I don't know if this is right or not, but we think that they're less likely to harm people who are so in the public eye. And so I think that that's one of the requests to our members of Congress or whoever your representatives are, wherever you are, is take up this political sponsorship. It costs you nothing. It's literally like a tweet that you post and you say you're going to take on this person's sponsorship. And then you do have to kind of keep an eye on what's happening for them. So like Yoon Rhee, I don't know if that's how her name is pronounced, but the one who started this in Germany, she's like tweeting every day about what's happening with Tamaj. You mentioned the rapper. That's who she's sponsoring. And she's like, what's happening with Tamaj? She has a hashtag. How healthy is Tamaj really? Like, she's constantly putting the pressure on them. And again, this is something that's free that our politicians could be doing.
You also have a Google Doc, right? Where you put together some thoughts and on this. Where can people find that?
Yeah, so that's bit.ly/freeiran2022. I recognize we're in 2023 now, but I made it 2022.
we'll post a link to that, obviously. And Montre, whatever you want us to post a link to, we will also for this episode. Really want people to get out there and to see that. Three things.
So the article that you referred to, the Kevin MD article, So that was actually, it's a two-part article. The first part was intended to inform the public about the atrocities that are going on under the Islamic Republic. And the second part is meant to inform people, you know, or educate people as to, you know, why they should care about the situation and how they can help and whatnot. And so I'm waiting for the second part of the article to actually get published. So hopefully that'll be out in the next 2 to 3 weeks, just to keep an eye out for it.
Yeah. Oh my God. Definitely. You know, this is not good podcasting to go back to a segment that we had earlier, but I just have so many questions about it. I feel like I have to, before we close up here. In your article, this Kevin MD article, you mentioned something I had not heard about. And as a human, as a Iranian, as a hepatologist, liver doctor, it fills me with so much rage. I am made of anger right now. I'm like 95% rage about this story that you shared, that they are in the regime before they release some of these political prisoners, of which they've detained thousands, as you mentioned. They're giving them IV injections, infusions, I guess, of acetaminophen, which can cause liver failure if done in toxic amounts. I have never heard of this before. Can you talk a little bit about this truly fucking horrendous thing?
Yeah. So when the political prisoners, AKA the protesters, were being released from prison, we noticed a trend where they were dropping like flies within 48 hours of being discharged from the prisons. And we weren't really understanding it because they were calling it suicides. But then there ended up being a report saying that it was actually acetaminophen toxicity. And more recently, there are reports coming out saying that it's opioid overdose that's causing them to essentially drop dead. And we're still trying to figure it out. We're trying to sort out what it is that they're injecting these protesters with. But very frequently, we're seeing that once they're released, they are dying within 48 hours.
That's some fucking horrendous and so twisted, sadistic thing to do, and so deeply cynical on a level that makes me question how faith exists. And it really...
Well, you have to, I think, to understand it, and this is relevant to a point that was made earlier too about this waging war against God, you have to understand that they see Khamenei, the current so-called supreme leader, as a representative of God. They see themselves as basically God and God's servants, like carrying out God's work directly. And so anything that is in their way is against God. And that is why going out in the street and protesting is waging war against God, because you're waging war against the regime, and the regime is God.
And look, you know, being injected with IV drugs and dying within 48 hours sounds horrendous because it is. But I think another thing that people need to realize is that even when we're saying that the reports of the numbers of people who died are about 500 plus and whatnot, or 500 plus and whatnot, you have to think about the people who are in prison. 18,000 plus individuals are imprisoned, and it does not mean that they are safe in prison, right? They are literally being physically tortured. They are being gang raped day and night. Nika Shahkarami, her story is really horrific. She was taken into captivity, 16-year-old girl. She got raped day and night, was tortured for 10 days before she was finally thrown off a building. And you know what? I saw the image of her body on that floor after she got thrown off the building. She had bruises all over. Her crotch, the pants were torn, and she was disfigured. So it's not just about the number of people who are dying. Girls in Iran are literally reaching out to me saying, I am not worried about dying. They can take me and kill me. That's fine. I'm worried about what they're going to do with me once I'm taken into captivity.
Well, even I've also heard from, you know, Basiji and whatever, Sepah, that they've even said themselves, those are the security forces of different kinds in Iran, that they themselves have said that they see this in the prisoners, that they're not worried about being executed. They're worried about what comes before, because we should just mention that they won't execute a virgin, because virgins who die go to heaven, and they don't want any of these protesters to go to heaven. So what they do is they have a sham wedding, and then they rape the person before they kill them.
And that's what they were doing. I'm not sure if they're even having the sham weddings at this point, because they're raping men and women, boys and girls. It's not limited to girls at this point any longer. And again, we have footage showing their bodies on the floors of the prisons after they've been raped. Showing the blood and this is gory.
There's also like Armita Abbasi's case. You know, you mentioned Nika, who unfortunately didn't survive. Armita is also a young girl. I think she's 22, who was detained from a protest and then was raped and tortured and sustained such severe injuries that they had to take her to the hospital. And then they took her to the hospital, and she was noted by the medical documentation to have vaginal and anal tears and severe bleeding. And the regime kidnapped her from the hospital. And then for a long while, we didn't know where she was. Like, there was no news about Armita. And then now we know that she's in prison and she just started a hunger strike. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I thought she was long gone. People were saying, where's Armita? I was like, well, there's no way she survived it. Fortunately, she has. And she has a sham trial awaiting her on January 26, which we'll all be on the lookout for. But this is the regime for you. There is also the case. The thing is, a lot of the prison or the protesters, even then when they're injured, they're afraid of going to the hospital. They're afraid of seeking medical care, because when they go to the hospitals, they're being abducted. There was a case of one girl who was taken in after being repeatedly raped, and she was bleeding out. She was hemorrhaging, and the physician refused to treat her. The physician was saying, oh, she's just on her menses. And the friend was saying, no, she's not on her menses. She's literally bleeding out. She was lightheaded and was hypotensive and whatnot. And I'm assuming that physician was working with the Islamic Republic, because there are plenty of other physicians who are actively going out of their way to treat these protesters. One of whom was Aida Rostami, who worked with Doctors Without Borders, and who she herself ended up being tortured and killed. And that's the person you were referring to when you mentioned her head, you know, one of the protesters' heads being bashed and their eye having gone missing. It wasn't actually a protester. It was Aida Rostami that happened to. And all she was doing was providing medical care to these protesters. And she's actually a friend of a friend of mine. And I was told that she would spend one day every week treating Afghani and Pakistani children. So she was a person who really volunteered her time to care for others, and look at what happened to her.
Well, and I would just add that there's been a lot of challenges for healthcare in Iran. Our colleagues, all three of us are physicians. Our colleagues have been trying to work in just unbearable conditions Because imagine if you're showing up to work and you don't know if you are going to be arrested for doing your work. You don't know if your patients are going to be abducted from the hospital. You don't know if you're going to survive or if they're going to survive. There have been blood shortages. And I heard this report, you know, a lot of this stuff is unverified, but that there was a truck of blood heading to one of the minority regions where there, we talked about the military force that was being used, and that the Islamic Republic actually damaged the truck and impeded its progress so that the blood couldn't get to the people who were injured. So that's all happening. There was also a peaceful rally of physicians a while back at which a surgeon, a young woman, Parisa Bahmani, was murdered by the Islamic Republic of Iran. So, you know, their fears are not exaggerated. They are making it nearly impossible for people to get care and to provide care. And that's why Aida Rostami, Dr. Rostami, was actually going to people's homes when she disappeared. It was the day that she'd been out caring for people in their homes.
Yeah, they're actually hijacking the ambulances as well. So people think that they're going into an ambulance to go to a medical hospital. I mean, I go to a hospital nearby, and that's not the case. All of a sudden, they're being abducted in these ambulances, you know? So it's been really difficult. There's actually a physician by the name of Dr. K on Instagram who became popular during COVID. And he's been treating a lot of these individuals via DM, believe it or not. They're sending him messages and they're life-threatening situations. And he's one person. I know he has a team now that's helping him. But for a while, he was one person trying to address all these life-threatening situations via Instagram. I mean, think about, I mean, try to wrap your mind around that. That's crazy.
This whole thing, it's more than my brain can handle. It's just like, it breaks my brain. The whole thing is just so unbearably bad. I know there are some bright spots. I know there are some things to look for. I know the bravery of these people is really something that we should look to as inspiration here. And I will. And I hope the listeners do too. And I hope the listeners feel like they can get involved on some level, on any level. But this is about the toughest I've ever had not breaking down during an episode. I've never been this hard. So it's been a real challenge. I mean, Argavan and I have been talking about doing this episode for a long time, actually. We've been talking about this pretty much since it started. And I think we both have sort of just been afraid to do it a little bit, to like just commit and just make it happen. I'm glad that we did. I suspect it's probably not the last time we're going to talk about it. And we'll have to come back to this subject some more and keep coming back to it and keep coming back to it and keep putting a light on it. Because I think if three of us don't, doctors like us don't, I don't know who will. And hopefully we've relayed the importance of it to people. I mean, it's as bad as you thought and worse, much worse. So
I just say though, there, on the topic of bright notes. So Dr. Hamid Karahassanlu he's a physician in Iran and a philanthropist. He and colleagues have opened up 4 schools in rural parts of Iran. And he was arrested after attending a funeral ceremony for Hadis Najafi. He and his wife were both arrested and he had been sentenced to death, but they actually overturned his death sentence, you know, supposedly on some technicality, but they don't really have technicality. So I don't know why, but you know, there was definitely an outpouring of support from the physician community worldwide for Dr. Karahassanlu. So that's one bright spot.
Yeah.
Amplifying the voices of the Iranian people helps. It really does help save lives. Sharing the hashtag, sharing the stories, it really makes a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys so much for coming on. Argavan, people can find you at Twitter, right? Where?
Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, whatever.
All right. And Montrek, where can people find you and read your article?
I'm big on Instagram. That's what I've been using primarily.
Yeah, I'm big in Europe. sure you're big on Instagram. I have a Canadian girlfriend. No, where can people find the article?
The article's available on KevinMD. If you Google search KevinMD and type out my name, it'll show up. I also have it on LinkedIn, on Twitter. I have posted it on Twitter. And you can find it on KevinMD's page, both on Twitter and on his website. So I will say one last thing.
Yeah.
And I may get some backlash for saying this. Yes, the people in Iran are fighting, but they're not going to win this revolution alone. They need all of us to unite and to support them in this, because if we can get our politicians to support us in the ways that we've mentioned, there's no doubt in my mind that we're going to win this. It's a slam dunk for us. We really need them to start taking those steps. And the only way that they're going to do it is with our pressure.
So please doesn't seem that controversial. Seems pretty.
She's really into what's happening in the Iranian diaspora and what's happening in Iran. I mean, there are a lot of, as you can imagine with anything else, there are a lot of different opinions on how this should go. And so, yeah.
I think something you guys have both made pretty clear is that reform ain't going to cut it. You can't reform this level of, evil. It's just not possible. Yeah. I mean, we talk about ACAB. I mean, all regimes are bastards. Oh, no, that's Arab. No, that's a whole different thing. We don't want to do that. We have to come up with something like this. We'll have to figure something out. We'll brainstorm offline. We'll figure it out. Okay. Anyway,
I have to say one more thing, though, for your listeners, is that one of the other really common things that people will say to me is that I shouldn't call it the Islamic Republic of Iran because it's not Islamic to do these things. And here's the thing. Like, that's the name of the country. That's the name of the regime. So if you are Muslim... and you don't like what they're doing to the name of Islam, then you too should be on our side trying to get rid of this regime, because that is the answer. Telling me to call them something other than what they are, I'm not gonna.
I agree. There's so much noise around this that's ridiculous. Like people saying, you can't be against the Iranian regime and be for the Palestinian people. I'll be like, fuck you, yeah, I can. Watch me. I'll show you how it's done. You know, there's so much of this nonsense. It's just tuning it out. Focusing on what's important. I think when people hear what's happening out there, when they see what's happening out there, they'll agree. I think it's a no-brainer. So I agree.
Yeah, and I'm just saying we're not here to be Islamophobic. That's not the point for any of us or the people in Iran even. The point is this regime is the problem, and they happen to have called themselves the Islamic Republic of Iran. There is literally nothing I can do about that. That's their name. But I'm not Islamophobic, and I don't think any of us are. And so people love to bring in other issues, right, instead of focusing on the real problem. But the real problem is the oppression of the people in Iran and their fight for freedom and democracy.
I'm all for religion.
We don't like to refer to it as the Islamic Republic of Iran any longer. It is the Islamic Republic versus Iran.
I like that. Good. Branding's in your future, my friend. I like it. All right. Thank you, guys. Let's talk again soon, okay?
All right, thanks so much.
This podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a physician or other qualified healthcare provider for your specific healthcare needs or concerns. The opinions expressed on this podcast do not represent the opinions of our employees. Details in the podcast have been changed so that patient identification is not possible. And I'm alive.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.